Babette. So, welcome everyone. Please excuse me, this is actually my first public speech, so bear with me. And before we start off, I would like to ask, does everybody know what this is, actually? And please raise your hand if you don't know what this is. Like, don't be shy. Okay, yeah, just a few people. It's an hourglass. In Dutch, zandloper. Got it? Okay. No, yeah, just checking. So I also want to start off with a personal story. And this came from a few years back. I decided to travel a bit for myself in Southeast Asia. And I met a guy there named Chris. So this is Chris. And Chris is basically, besides his length, I would say he ticks all the boxes of becoming successful. Smart guy, he has a Stanford MBA, and here he's in his late 20s working for McKinsey. I'm roughly 5 years older than Chris, and during our travels we stayed together for roughly like 2 weeks, and at a certain point we both rented a scooter, so we started driving and Chris got an accident. So as you can see here, his leg got open, he had a hole in his foot, and there was a Thai woman with a pickup truck who saw this, who picked him up, brought him to the hospital together with me, and there they initially didn't want to treat him. And then Chris said, but wait, I work for McKinsey. So he made a call, and literally within 5 minutes, they were ready to give him surgery to treat him. He got even his own room in the hospital, and I was allowed to sleep next to him. So I stayed with Chris for 2 nights, and I just had to provide my own drinks and my own food. And this was basically the start also of friendship. And we started talking a lot about how life at McKinsey is and how he could be at such a young age already progressing in his career, but also how it is to be at Stanford and to have an MBA from Stanford. So then I came back to the Netherlands and I started looking for a new job. And Chris told me that he was in the late stages of his application process for a startup in the NFT business in the US. And he said to me, like, Ranjit, I think I'm going to sign this offer and you should really join. They're looking for a second leadership position and this is a great company. And I said, like, okay, cool, what are you making? And he was very transparent. So he said, like, yeah, they offered me $150,000 for a year. I said, like, that's a pretty good salary. And he said, like, yeah, yeah, it's standard. You know, if you have a Stanford MBA, then this is basically what they offer you. So you, Ranjit, that's what he told me, with your 5 years additional experience, basically we agreed you should be earning the same money. So he introduced me to the founder. I went into the conversation with them and into the recruitment process. And then at the final stages, I was sitting there with the founder, and then he asked me, Ranjit, what do you want to earn? Chris just signed, and I told him, I want to earn $150,000. So he looked at me, and then he paused, and then he looked at me again, and then he said, like, no, that's not going to happen. And then he said, I can offer you $110,000. So I asked him, knowing in the back of my mind that Chris just got signed for $150,000, why is that? And he said, like, yeah, you know, you don't have the Stanford MBA. And I said, like, okay, that's fine, that's true. I don't have a Stanford MBA, I don't have any MBA. But why should I then earn less? And he kept arguing about it, that the Stanford MBA was basically the golden standard for it. And this is a very irrational decision made from them. And I didn't took the job because I didn't felt that I would be hired basically for my own potential and for the performance that I could deliver. Chris, he actually left after 3 months. So this was still also for the company really not a good fit. And this is basically what kept playing around in my mind, right? You don't have an MBA like Chris. So what does this tell us actually? This tells us that people are still irrational. And we keep being irrational. And that also plays down in what we do. For example, I have a colleague, and I know that every year he is spending his hard-earned money in the casino, in Holland Casino in the Netherlands. Maybe some of you have been there too. Knowing that all the odds are against you, But still you go. People keep smoking cigarettes or eating processed food, even though we know that it will shorten our lifespan. And this also plays into talent acquisition, but this also plays into diversity, equity, and inclusion. And especially for the people who make the decisions about this. And the thing that I want to give back to you is to really understand, if you want to make a change, is basically who decides about diversity, equity, and inclusion within your own company. Is that the CEO? Then why? Why does he or she want that? Is that the board of directors? Is that your own manager who says we need to do this? Or is that basically the people that are already working in the company, or the people that are applying to the company that say, yeah, we want to see more DE&I, because then it becomes just basically an advertisement board. And to share you one example here, this is CBRE. For the people who don't know this company, CBRE is a real estate service provider and has very famous clients like Google, Microsoft, JP Morgan. So when they want to lease a big building, then CBRE is basically the one who provides it. It's a huge company, biggest in the world in the industry. And this is literally what they put on their own website. And I'm not saying that this is wrong, but this would mean that if I would, for example, team up with my colleague Jan here, who is Dutch and a white male in the Netherlands, and we split the company, they don't do business with us. But if I own more than 51% of the company and operate and manage it, then they do want to do business with me. Does that say that I deliver better performance as a supplier? You don't know, right? But it's weird that it happened, that it's still happening like this. And this is why I brought this picture back again, because this is an hourglass, Zandloper, that is basically upside down, because it's currently what's happening with DE&I. It starts at the top, where there's a lot of DE&I quota. This is what we need to do. We need more women. We need more people from different social backgrounds. And then through that, you start to funnel that into searching for people and into searching for talent, which on the one hand limits you as well. It limits you as a recruiter because your talent pool is generally limited. And if you then need to pick the woman, for example, then you need to do it even though the performance is less. It creates basically diverse teams that are performing suboptimal. This is also not what you want, because you're generating less impact for the business. So the one thing that we say is, let's focus on what the business needs. And let's really look back through the whole funnel, and not just the roles that you need to fill as a recruiter. What does the business actually need in performance? And also, how can you then make the biggest impact to do so? And the example that I want to give for this is from L'Oreal. Is there anybody in the room who doesn't know L'Oreal? Okay, that's good. So L'Oreal has been recognized by Bloomberg for the fifth consecutive year for the Equality Index. And we have been working with L'Oreal for the past 7 years. And how did they achieve this? And this is not by just focusing purely on hiring more diverse talent, or being more inclusive, or having set KPIs or set metrics for this. No, this took a whole organization-wide change and approach in how they've done it. And the first thing that the employer branding teams and the talent acquisition teams and the recruitment and development teams started doing together is to change basically the mindset and to really say, talent is everywhere, opportunity is not. And it can be that you don't have access to the untapped talent pools, as Kobe before already explained, or that you don't see it, or that you cannot even identify talent that is there. But the first step is to acknowledge it with the team. This is also what they did, and to say, okay, let's figure out how can we change this. So the first thing that they did is to see as many candidates as possible. And this is a hard one, and I also know, especially for smaller companies, if you don't have 1,000 resumes flying in each month, that is a challenge. And then I would definitely urge you to use external platforms, for example, Jobs for Humanity, of a few that Kobe just mentioned. But seeing as many candidates as possible basically increases the chances, and you also increase the opportunity to find the talent that gives you the performance that you need in competencies. So this is something that L'Oréal said that they wanted to do. And one of the most important things that they did is to, at the first step, get rid of the CV. So they wanted to be ahead of the unconscious bias. And second, they wanted to get rid of the CV because they also know that even afterwards, in a later stage, it creates a lot of bias as well. And third, they wanted to attract basically people from different groups, but also from different universities, different backgrounds, and to make it easy for them to apply to the business. So once they've done this in the first step, they could already ensure that they had done this. But then there was still the question, what does then good look like? Like, what do we need on performance? So they did an internal assessment with their own employees. So they gave a lot of employees working at L'Oréal, they gave them an assessment and to understand, okay, what competencies drive performance? And they did this for different roles. And this is basically how they start utilizing that as a first step, which gave actually the recruiters a lot of time back, which they could use and spend on the onboarding, or they could spend it also to have more personal attention for the candidates. Or what some of the recruiters did, they actually went to different universities and not the famous ones. So for example, the Netherlands, Nijrode is a really high praised university, but also to other ones or even to high schools to already scout and get early talent in just to see and to identify who actually has the best performance for it. And then second step, what they did is they started to shortlist purely based on performance, and through that over time, you will, by natural, also start to increase your diversity. So they told the recruiters, no CVs, don't look at it, just look at the performance in competencies, because they by now know what it meant for them, and start to shortlist this, and shortlist these candidates. And in the case that there were a lot of candidates for the same role that all showed good performance, they added a personality assessment, or they added a cognitive assessment to basically further narrow this down. And again, also here, to make sure that they could hire the right persons with the right potential, and it shouldn't matter where this potential then actually comes from. And the last step what they did is to basically define what a quality hire is. And a quality hire should deliver great retention and great performance. And this is still something that I see that a lot of companies, and I know with some of you in the audience I've been in contact with as well, struggle with, because then you see that people still leave early in the company or don't show the performance that you actually want or that you actually need to make the biggest impact. And that's the thing, right? If you look at the biggest challenges in the world, they're still solved by people. And I think the beauty of being a recruiter or the gatekeeper is that you as a person, you make a decision about other people and also about the impact that they can make within the business through their own job role that they have. So this is why I say, let's turn around the hourglass and let's start at the top by broadening basically your talent pool, by tapping into the untalent pools. And I think if you paid good attention to Kobe, you now know a little bit how to access them. And then second, to really start to hire for performance. So go back to your hiring manager, but also go back to your CHRO and say like, hey, I think we really should start to fill the roles with the performance that we actually need. Because over time, through these new talent pools that you then identify, you will actually increase your DE&I. And this is the example how L'Oréal has come on the top in the D&I index now since the last couple of years. Yeah.
Thanks so much. I know that you purposely left some time to be able to answer questions. Are there people in the audience? Oh, yes, I see. I will take the mic, yes. Because we are filming, so people at home can watch later and they won't understand if we don't use a microphone. Alsjeblieft.
Thanks for your talk and really well done for the first time public speaking.
Oh, so. Yeah. Thank you.
I have a question. I'm not sure if you know, but with L'Oreal, what I struggle with is you try to create a game or an algorithm based on your current employees. But if your current employees are not very diverse now, or like you're still looking for the one profile from the last 50 years, for example, how can you then open up to new pools? So, yeah. For example, we recruited maybe for Nijenrode everyone, so we think that that profile is really good.
Yeah.
But now we want to open up to other universities, for example.
Yeah, good question. I think that there are two ways, basically, because the first one is, let's say everybody is from Nijenrode. If you would analyze them and then really look at what competencies drive to success, then you could, for example, proactively go out to different talent pools and then, based on your assessment or the benchmark, the competencies that you need, try to find this in other people, because you'll be surprised that people that are not from Nijenrode have actually the right competencies to deliver that performance. So that's one way. And the second part is if you use software, then you can use basically data that's already in the software available. For example, what we have done is we collected a lot of competency and performance data from people. And we did this in specific groups as well, which smaller companies can use. So they can quickly benchmark against these groups of people where we already collected the data from. So then you can quickly also assess, is this a person who would actually fit into the performance perspective?
Thank you.
Does that answer the question?
Yes, definitely.
Okay.
Yeah. Any other questions from the audience? Okay.
So my question is, you have a little different philosophies when it comes to how companies should look at talent. If you look at, let's say, Para, you look at, your current population benchmark, and then how do you assess them against other talent, so to say. In your experience, looking at different tooling out there, why would you say that Para is the ideal way to look at talent and assessing?
Yeah, that's of course a very biased answer, right? Because I work for the company.
Let's see if you can be objective.
What I'm saying now is true, and that's also from my... Let me share this, then I'll answer it, but let me give a bit of background, because I'm Dutch, and I'm adopted in the Netherlands, and I grew up in Zuid-Limburg, so I have a very different accent. I heard it a lot in Amsterdam. And when Para approached me, that was super interesting, because that's, for me, it's something personal. And even though I'm Dutch, you wouldn't say it, but I experience a lot of biased and maybe systematic discrimination in my professional working field, which is weird, right? Because I'm educated, I'm Dutch, I just don't look Dutch, and I have a softer slang, basically. And for me, joining Para was basically a challenge to help people also like me, but also help employers, because the employers are sometimes still very narrow-down, and the people that make these decisions are from, in a lot of cases, a different generation. And what Para has done is they use a really unique methodology to assess performance in a very equal way, and that is done through language, because the moment at a certain age you developed your language, that's really unique, that is really bound to you. It's the way how you communicate. And this identifier is then unique for everyone, and there's a lot of hidden information in it that we were able to extract by actually collecting language data from, I think now it's, I'm looking at over 5.5 million people. And then you can really start to understand the patterns. Okay, people that are in sales role have a different way of how they communicate, and you can extract then the competencies and the performance data out of it. And we actually collected this performance data, and this is also why I honestly believe that is the right methodology and the right way of doing it, and also why I joined the company.
Great pitch.
Thank you.
I'm sure you'll have many new appointments after today for lead generation. Maybe a question from my side. You just showed that L'Oreal, their gender equality index grew.
Yeah.
You also mentioned how this can contribute to better retention, so longer employability. Yeah. Do you have any numbers on that as well? Do you notice that now that L'Oréal has been using your tool for the past few years, that their employees tend to stay longer in the company as well? Their newly hires are more successful, let's say?
Yeah, we do. We actually do. And I don't know all of them out of my head, but I know that, for example, and we did this also with L'Oréal, and we even looked at different countries, that, for example, people that were hired through Para showed a 15% higher retention than the people who are not. And we even did it specifically for salespeople, where we looked at people that then were hired through Para versus basically the norm that was already there in L'Oréal. And there we could see that the people that scored high on the Para benchmark almost had a 30% higher revenue, and it was after, I think, 16 or 18 months. So yeah, so we collected a lot of them. We also have case studies that we have also on our website and on the internet. I don't want to emphasize too much, but yeah, we do have it available. Yeah.
Okay, great numbers, great results. Any other questions from the audience? No? Okay, then I want to thank you so much, and
yes,
we will start our break
me.
And see each other in 40 minutes.
Yeah, thank you.